the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals. And on the line with me, recording on a Thursday afternoon, episode 518, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We have... This is, I guess, Seth, this is going to be kind of our last, you know, kind of throwaway offseason show. I don't want to call it a throwaway show, but this is, we've had a couple of weeks of, 2 or 3 weeks where we're kind of focusing less on the Cardinals and kind of more fabricating stuff because the meat and potatoes of the offseason is yet to come. Next week we'll be doing our free agent preview, whether it's one or two shows. After that, we'll be talking about the combine. Then free agency will have started, and so we can talk about moves that are beginning to happen. And then after that, we can, you know, jump right into a draft preview. And so this is not heavy content, but it is content nonetheless, Seth, of course.
Yeah, and it's the fun time of year where I know some people are like, this is boring, but like it's fun to start the speculation before like you ramp up to everything else. And that's how, you know, that's what makes the off season so much fun, is that there are a lot of opportunities to have these conversations, the speculation, and go from there. There's really not much going on, but we've got,
there's one thing, though. I mean, big thing happening, and that the front office is shifting. And that's what we're going to lead with, is the first bit of news. Now, honestly, for neither one of this, is this a surprise, but this is actual news. On Wednesday, it was reported that VP of player personnel, Quentin Harris, had parted ways with the team. Now, before we recorded the show on Thursday afternoon, Josh Weinfuss of ESPN reports that also Drew Grigson, who had been their director of scouting, had also left, that they had parted ways. And it makes it feel like that the way, isn't the way it worded, is that the Cardinals said goodbye either via, hey, we're not extending your contract, like their contract expired, or they just said goodbye. It wasn't fired because of performance. And I'm not, neither one of us believes it's fired by performance, but essentially they were let go.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that came out of this, and you know, shout out to Jody Ayler of Fox Sports 910, I believe now, or still, or whatever, however you want to, whatever. But, you know, he had a fairly astute observation, and he said these two changes reflect Michael Bidwell's seriousness in empowering Monty and Jonathan Gannon and leaving the past in the past. Sure, they have a lot to offer, but best for everyone if it's for another org. And that's the thing, is like you said, this isn't necessarily a performance-based response by the Cardinals. This is Monty's team.
Yes.
This is JG's team. And while Grigson and Harris have some high-level qualities about them, neither of them are Monty guys. And so, like he said, it's one of those things that is kind of best for the organization. And when you see that, it's tough because, you know, like players, you and I have, you know, root for these guys, because making it in the NFL, especially the front office stuff, I don't think people realize how long and arduous of a journey that is for probably 95% of the guys that get there. I mean, most of them start as scouts making $35,000-$40,000. I mean, scouts literally make what teachers make, and all we talk about is how underpaid and undervalued teachers are. And that's not to compare their jobs, but I mean, scouts are, especially, you know, rural area scouts, they're on the road 200 days a year, and away from their home, and they're making $35,000-$40,000 a year to do that job. Like, it's a very thankless job. And most guys spend 5 to 7 years and, you know, and they can build up to being, you know, a larger area scout, you know, director of this scouting area. With that comes some kind of financial compensation boost. But I mean, we're not talking about those guys making six figures until they get actual titles. And that typically happens, you know, like I said, 5 to 7 years down the line. And so that's why a lot of guys jump around to places, because they're looking for, you know, what they feel is the best opportunity to get that vertical ladder. Or why guys stay in one place so long, because they see the route. And both Harris and Gregson actually came in together and have been with the Cardinals for 16 years, which is ironic in and of itself, right? Both guys been with the team for 16 years and they both have departed after 1 year under the new regime. And again, I fathom it tough to believe that either of these moves are merit-based, right? Like, I don't think anybody looks at what Quentin Harris or Drew Gregson did from their working standpoint and said, we got to get rid of these guys. But there is a change in the philosophy. And with that, you have to surround yourself, if you're Monty Awesome Fort and Jonathan Gannon, you surround yourself with the same people that have this same philosophy and that have what you're looking for. You know, and for Gregson and Harris, you know, good luck. You know, appreciate everything over the last 16 years. They were part of the regime that oversaw the most successful, you know, runs in Cardinals history. So, I mean, this, it's not like they're guys that just, you know, hangers on like, you know, the pre-Denny Green era, right? Where a lot of those guys probably didn't deserve where they got to. No, these guys have been a part of a regime that, you know, in that Arians era really changed the face of things and got to the playoffs again, won the most games in Arizona with Cliff. It's just, you know, they're looking for a philosophical change, and you kind of had it, you know, off the perfect way. And it's not that they're trying to formulate or emulate the Patriots way, but you want to have that vision of the Cardinals way, and we're going to do things this way from now on. And that starts at the top with Monty, and you know, if these aren't his guys, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and you have to look at it now, Harris especially, because I wonder how it was for him. He loves the Cardinals organization, obviously. He and Gregson both, they date back to the Rod Graves days and then worked their way up. Obviously, Steve Keim was promoted. The Cardinals, traditionally, their front office has been a promotion-based. And so it's a build.
Yeah, very, very Cardinals-centric.
Yeah, build through the organization. That's kind of how it's always been done, because you had, you know, Larry Wilson was the GM. You know, he was a player and coach. You had Bob Ferguson briefly, then Rod Graves comes in, and he's groomed into the GM. Steve Keim, he's there for a decade. They bring, like, you have Adrian Wilson and Quentin Harris, you know, ascending through the ranks of the organization to the second-in-command. And after Keim took his leave of absence, Harris and Wilson were co-GMs. They both interviewed for the vacant general manager job, and if we go back a year, a little more than a year, when that process was happening, Seth and I both felt that it would be, if you looked at it over the previous few years, it was always sort of, they were getting Adrian Wilson to be that next guy, that next Cardinals great, who is the front office guy, almost like Larry Wilson 2.0. But then different direction. They go an absolute different direction. They bring someone from outside the organization. And think about it this way. It wasn't just one, but it's two things. Like, you know, I wonder how – I mean, Harris had to be disappointed, because they hired Austin Ford. So Harris interviewed for the job. He didn't get it. Austin Ford came. And then, rather than promoting – Well, rather than leaving Harris, who was the number two guy. If you know some of the NFL like hierarchy, there's general manager, there's assistant general manager, there's VP of player personnel. Then just below that, or kind of side by side, is VP of pro personnel, is kind of how that goes. And then it's either president, VP, no, or not president. You'll sometimes have president, you'll have VP, you'll have director. And that's kind of how they went. And so you build those titles up. And there were only two technical titles that could be higher than what Harris had, and it's assistant GM and GM. They brought in a new GM from outside the organization. And not only that, Austin Ford hired Steve Sears from the Lions to be the assistant general manager. So Harris went from the number one and being the number two guy to being number three. That's rough. Austin Ford talked about reshaping the scouting department and making sure that they're doing it the way he envisions it. The way that Gregson and Harris had done things obviously was different. And so it's not a surprise at all. It isn't, it doesn't mean that there was anything acrimonious about the dismissal. I'm sure there were hard feelings, or maybe both guys were ready to go because they didn't like the way that Austin Fort was doing things is not the way they prefer to do it. And you know, with new leadership, you do have to pivot and adjust all the time. But if it's philosophically a different base, it's normal. It's normal for this sort of attrition, especially when you're hit at a spot where, guess what? They both had reached the top where they were going to get. Once they brought in Austin Ford, they had sort of hit the ceiling for what they could do. So the best thing you can see for them is laterally moving to another organization or getting a promotion. Adrian Wilson did it a year early. He ended up getting a player personnel position, like the number two guy, ahead of what he was doing before with the Cardinals because he was VP of pro personnel with the Panthers. And so once you hit a certain spot within an organization and you can't move up anymore, the natural thing is to then sidestep and find at least a lateral movement to another organization.
Yeah, and just the fact that, you know, both of these guys, Harris and Gregson, started as area scouts in 2008 and then, you know, worked their way up through the organization, it tells you their willingness to grind. You know, I talked about it earlier, like area scout from 2008 to 2010, then regional scout from 2010 to 2012, and then director of college scouting starting in 2013. And again, 2013 through 2018, there were definitely some bad drafts, but you have to admit those were some very solid draft seasons for the Cardinals. They did a nice job. Gregson, especially, you know, in that role, you have to be impressed with what he did. And, you know, it's hard to understand because whenever you talk about guys losing their job, you don't want to sound excited, right? Like, that's the one thing you don't want to be like, oh, good, this guy. But what I'm excited about is that this is, and you kind of spelled it out perfectly, this is a new venture.
Yes.
From Michael Bidwell. Like, we have not seen this happen. I mean, even with Bruce Arians, it was Steve Keim and Drew Gregson, and those guys were still the guys in the front office. Now, Arians, the only way I can explain is that this is similar to how Arians kind of forced Bidwell's hand with the coaching aspect of things, right? Like the assistant coaches and the expert, like this is a similar thing to that. And that worked out great for, you know, for 4 or 5 years, and then things didn't work out. But obviously it's a lot different when you're talking about front office, because there's tends to be a longer term vision in place. And so to see Bidwell do this and go a different route for the first time in really the team's history in Arizona is interesting, because I think what it's saying is that this group is going to be given a chance. And that's all, you know, we kind of wanted to see, is that they were able to bring in their guys, do their things. And now it doesn't mean it's a guarantee to work. It doesn't mean anything like that, but it's a different way of doing things instead of trying to get a different result from the same, you know, the same process. And that to me is incredibly exciting, because let's be honest, we just haven't seen it before.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Syrah podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Our next segment, we're going to talk about odds for some awards and the Cardinals that are involved, and well, what are probably the best bets. That's coming up next on Rise Up Syrah. We're back on the Rise Up Syrah podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We've talked about if we look at the Cardinals' odds to win the Super Bowl, we look at Kyler Murray's MVP odds. Recently, BetMGM, I haven't looked at DraftKings, but has odds for the big winners of the Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year. And I want to kind of take a look at each of these from a Cardinals perspective. It's Coach of the Year first. The Coach of the Year is always an interesting one, because it really isn't about being the best coach, right? It's not about being the best coach.
It's about exceeding the expectations.
Right. So this year was Kevin Stefanski of Cleveland just eking out D'Amico Ryans by, they had the same number of points. Stefanski had one extra vote. And if you look at what they did, Stefanski took the Browns to the playoffs despite just incredible setbacks with injury. Deshaun Watson in and out of the lineup, and then, you know, going with Joe Flacco at the end of the year. Nick Chubb out, left tackle out, and then, you know, they've had to deal with so much. D'Amico Ryans was my pick, and what he just did with that Houston Texans team. But it's always about, it's sort of expectations. You look at how the odds are built. They're, how new are they? One. Two, what does the team project to be? And that's kind of what if you are more likely to exceed those, you have shorter odds. And if you have longer odds, it's because it seems a little bit less likely, because the favorite for Coach of the Year is Jim Harbaugh at plus 550, the new coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, almost at San Diego Chargers. and the Chargers coming off a bad year. They've got definitely some talent. Harbaugh is incredibly, incredibly successful as a head coach. But kind of the names on here that are really interesting, Matt LaFleur, Packers, Raheem Morris of the Falcons is number three, but, you know, is behind only Harbaugh and the newcomers and the Falcons, which have talent but not a good quarterback, and Raheem Morris. Could they take the next step? Go all the way down to plus 2,200 or 22-1 odds is Jonathan Gannon with 11 coaches with shorter odds. What was your initial, like, I saw that, those odds, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. With Gannon being right there.
Yeah, the one that's most interesting to me is Raheem Morris, because that's basically saying that they think that he's going to help turn around that Falcons team quickly. And I just don't see it without the moves at quarterback. So, you know, for him to be plus 1,000 is really interesting. DraftKings, the odds are a little shorter for Jonathan Gannon, just a little, plus 2,000, so 20-1 odds. So again, probably a better, if you believe in Gannon, go bet on BetMGM, better odds. And he is 10th, so, you know, again, a little bit shorter odds. This book likes his chances a little more, ahead of guys like Antonio Pierce, Dave Canales, you know, those newcomers to go with other ones, and even like Dan Quinn. you know, Gannon at 20 to 1, 22 to 1, it's the odds are so long. You look at it after D'Amico Ryan's, at least on DraftKings, you know, everything is plus 1,800 or longer. So Harbaugh's Jim is plus 500, Matt LaFleur's plus 800, Raheem Morris is plus 1,000, then Shane Steichen, Robert Saleh, Mike McDonald, the new Seattle Seahawks head coach, and then D'Amico Ryan's all plus 1,400. And then Sean McVay and Matt Eberflus are both plus 1,800. Eberflus is an interesting one too, man, because, like, I think he could also be the first coach to be fired, right?
Yes. Like,
so, but so Gannon being behind those guys, I mean, outside of Morris, I think all of those kind of make sense in front of him, because the thing with Gannon is going to be the expectation is they're going to win. I'm going to guess they come in at 6.5.
Yeah.
Wins on the season. So 8 wins, which is what you and I've talked about, that 8 to 9 wins, that's not exceeding expectations. That's slightly exceeding, but that's not like, right. That's not, you know, blowing them out of the water. So if they come in at 6.5, you almost typically have to double what those expectations are. So probably 11 or 12 would get him in that top tier conversation, barring a Kyler injury, and then they win, you know, 9 or 10 games. Kind of like what you were saying with why Stefanski won this year. So, so for those reasons, you know, I think it'll be interesting. I don't hate those odds. Like I said, if you truly believe in them, take plus 2,200 on BetMGM, because those are, you know,
it's a little bit more profitable.
Yeah.
Interesting for me, you know, who have the longest odds? The longest odds are at plus 6,600. Andy Reid, because
can you do anything to win?
Right. It's Kevin Stefanski, who just won it, because you're not going to have a repeat winner. Dennis Allen, who we don't know if he's they this is saying nobody believes in the Saints at all.
Right.
And Allen might not make the season. And then Todd Bowles is another interesting one.
Yeah, to see him that low, that screams that they don't know what to think of him. You know, he could be the first guy to get fired, especially if they don't bring Baker back, right? Because their quarterback situation is bad at best without Baker. So we'll see kind of how that goes. You know, what's interesting is that, and what do they go off of? The AP coach of the year, right?
Yes. Yes, they do.
You know, Andy's only won that one time. And he's going to be a Hall of Fame coach. Bill Belichick has only won it 3 times, and he's potentially the greatest coach ever. Like, it's not really an award for, like you're saying, the best head coach. It's who gets the most
surprising,
out
of, right? It's the most surprising good season, or in the absence of that, it's the coach who had the absolute most dominant team all year.
Right. And so, you know, you look at it, you look at how those things came out. I'm not overly surprised that's the way it falls. It is interesting. I'll say this. It's interesting when to see Harbaugh, because every year the expectation is LA is going to be. Yeah. No, sorry.
Oh, you're talking about Chargers.
I meant to
Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh. The expectation is they're going to be good, right? Every single year. And they kind of always fall short, right? Like, and yes. So it's just really interesting that's every single year you see that, and you're just kind of like, okay.
Oh.
Like,
with Harbaugh, they're expected to be good. With LaFleur and the Packers, you're expecting them to be, you know, 11 plus wins, right? Like, that's kind of what you're seeing there. Raheem Morris, that they're going to be a division winner. Steichen as well for the Colts. That's an interesting one. Shane Steichen is one I kind of like, because they have some of the building blocks in place. You've got Anthony Richardson coming back. D'Amico Ryans, honestly, I wouldn't put him there, because how can he, unless the Texans come back this year and are like the best one team in the seed, AFC. Yeah. Right. If they end up being like the one seed, yes. McDonald, yeah. Sean McVay. McVay's an interesting one because of where the Rams are, because they won their championship, but because they had such a really good rookie class, they have a good mix of star old players, you know, Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Aaron Donald, and then ascending young players that were great as rookies with Puka and Kobe Turner and Byron Young. And so that's a team that's seriously stupid how they've been able to maintain their sort of level of success. Eberflus is weird. Dave Canales, I get, because no one expects anything out of the Panthers this year. But at the same time, he's right in the middle of the pack because there is the potential for certainly exceeding expectation. Mike McDaniel, that's going to be hard to do because the Dolphins year after, like over the last couple of years, are like, they're great, but then they're not good. And so they disappoint. Dan Campbell's going to be hard. The Lions, I think, I'm surprised Campbell's where he's at because it's going to be really, really hard for them to surprise anyone.
Right. Yeah, and you know, just to kind of follow up or kind of, you know, put a bow on this, it's really interesting how Coach of the Year works because, you know, Kevin Stefanski, this is his second time winning. Now, I don't know if you knew that off the top of your head. I didn't know that until I just looked it up.
2020, right?
Yeah. But right after him were Sean McDermott, who's still, you know, a coach. I don't know if he's good or bad at this point. Brian Flores and Ron Rivera were, you know, 3-4. And then in 2021, the winner was Mike Vrabel. And in third place was Rich Bisaccia. So, like, it's not really, like, it's probably the award that most doesn't matter because, like, you look at it, you know, 2022, Brian Daboll, who's on the hot seat now, Shanahan was second, and Doug Peterson, who's on the hot seat for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, like, it's just an interesting how this works because, you know, Vrabel's gone. You know, these guys that are, you know, runners up or considered really good coaches are gone. And so it's different, man, because it's such a unique award because like you said, it's such a year based award over maybe every other one.
We have the other two players of the year. Let's talk defensive player of the year first. There's a gazillion players because it's so wide what you can do. And so you've got, if you even know, I don't even know who Malcolm Rodriguez is. He's listed at 250-1 at plus 25,000. Isaiah Simmons, plus 25,000. You've got rookies. You've got guys who are going to be drafted. You got Braylon Trice listed. But of all of those gazillions of defensive players who have odds to win Defensive Player of the Year, there is a singular Arizona Cardinals player, and that is Budda Baker, who is definitely a long shot. He's at plus 15,000 or 150-1. In the same category as, here's the guys also, and there's, well, I had it written down. I think there's like 30 players that have the same odds at plus 15,000, but no, there's not even a mention of anyone else on that Cardinals defense with good reason, because Budda Baker is the only name on that defense that anyone would recognize. Hardcore NFL fans might know Jalen Thompson and Kaiser White, but literally anybody else on that defense, you're like, who? Nobody knows.
And it's just such a hard award for a defensive back to win anyway.
It hasn't been since 2010 that a safety won.
Yeah, and so you look at it, Deron Bland set an NFL record for most pick sixes in a year. He finished fifth last year, the top non defensive line or pass rusher was Sauce Gardner. He finished eighth. 2021, the there wasn't even a guy that got a vote. 2020, Xavier Howard finished third. Like, that's the thing, is like getting a vote is almost impossible.
Right. If you're, it's mostly a sack.
Yeah. And so
unless you're a shutdown corner with big interception numbers. So Deron Bland had big interception numbers. He's not a shutdown corner.
Right. And the last guy to win it was 2019. Stephon Gilmore won it. And that's when he was with the Patriots. And, you know, it was, like you said, his year that year, six interceptions on top of 20 passes defense. So he led the league in interceptions and passes defense. So, like, massive, massive year. And like you said, for a safety, it's like you've got to probably have five interceptions and five sacks to even get a vote, to get yourself on the voting.
Well, and historically, you know how many safeties have won Defensive Player of the Year?
I think just three, right?
Five. There have been five historically. And you know what's really interesting is that three of them came between 2004 and 2010. Because you had Ed Reed, Bob Sanders, and Troy Polamalu. That was the early 2000s was really sort of
the heyday for the safeties.
It was. And you had some good, like, fantastic Polamalu, who's an absolute fantastic. Ed Reed, Hall of Famer. Bob Sanders, who, like, when he was healthy, was so, so, so good. But no, the safety position just doesn't do it. And we know Buda Baker is a more impact, like, he has volume tackles. He's never been a ball, like, in terms of ball hawk interceptions. In fact, that's one of the knocks that came out of college was his didn't have great hands. Like, he's...
Yeah, lack of production, you know, and getting turnovers. And yeah, I mean, so that's just it. Like, the last guy to, like, get votes that didn't have a huge year was Xavier Rhodes, and that was in 2017. And he only had two interceptions, but he's a corner. Because, like, even Harris Smith, when he finished seventh, and that was in 2017, and that's the last safety I can find that, like, had he finished fourth. That was the last. That was, like, the highest I found a safety. He had five interceptions, 12 passes defensed, and 1.5 sacks. Like, it's genuinely nearly, like, we always say things like, you know, say, you know, throw $5 on it and see what happens. Don't do that.
No, go for it, though. What you do like, and if you look at just how much it swayed towards sacks and edge defenders, is that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the top seven, or the seven players with the shortest odds, and the only ones that are below 20-1 are all edge guys. Every single one of them. Micah Parsons plus 550, TJ Watt plus 650, Nick Bosa plus 650, also Max Crosby, Myles Garrett, reigning defensive player of the year plus 700, Aiden Hutchinson plus 1100, Josh Allen, not the quarterback, but the Jaguars guy, a plus 1800, and then it jumps to plus 2500 with Chris Jones, Will Anderson, plus 3000, Montez Sweat plus 3000. And then you get Kyle Hamilton. That's the first safety, the favorite of the safeties at plus 3,000 of the Ravens. And, you know, if there was a safety to do it, he's probably the guy who's going to win it this year.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You look at it like Kyle Hamilton had a dynamic year this year.
Ravens defense where safeties and linebackers are just amazing.
And he had four interceptions, 13 passes defense, and three sacks, and he didn't get a single vote. So again, it's not that they're not worthy. It's just really hard to get votes
Betting Defensive Player of the Year, that with that group of pass rushers, that almost for me is a why bet. Because it's any of those, it's such a toss up. Because could Micah do it? Yes. Because these are all big sack guys. If you know the first guy, I think odds wise that I would toss just two guys, Aiden Hutchinson and Will Anderson. Because Aiden Hutchinson is, wow, he's good, and he has that potential to take that next step. Like Nick Bosa's already been there. TJ Watt's already been there. So we've got guys that are already been there. Aiden Hutchinson is the guy I would say. And then even Will Anderson, because he's young and he had the 7 sacks and they all came towards the late part of the season. And just how good we both believed he would be in the pros. But yeah, other than that, I mean, like with defensive player, I mean, I'm like, why? Why would you do any of those? Because especially if you want to spread out a bet, because they're like, it's worth spreading around 2 or 3, but you need to get those guys at like plus 1,000 or more. Otherwise you're just, you put too much bets out there. Only one's going to win and you just evened your money. it's good. Right. Like and you've got 2 or 3, but there's not just 2 or 3 on here that you could go, oh yeah, there's too many, way too many.
I think the only two that make financial sense to me are Will Anderson Jr. and Chris Jones. Cause Will Anderson Jr. on DraftKings is plus 2,500. Chris Jones is plus 3,000. So, you know, so those at least, you know, you fire $10 on those, you win 250 or 300 and it's no big deal.
Offensive player of the year. A gazillion guys. The favorite, and this is, again, the favorite is Christian McCaffrey at plus 500. Guess what? I wouldn't put money on McCaffrey to do what he did this year. Definitely not.
But the thing is the top four I wouldn't bet on because, again, the value is just not enough. And actually, yeah. I wouldn't bet on the top five. But after the top five, I see a lot of value. You just have to be willing to understand that, like, once you're getting into that 22-1 range, the odds are not in your favor. But
it's also, if you wanted to pick 3 or 4 guys to throw $10 down on, then you still win big. You win 200, but lose 30.
Well, and just think of it this way. You could bet $10 on 5 guys in the plus 2,200 range or above and clear 170 or bet $10 on Christian McCaffrey just to win 50 and hope that you like, cause you can't bet the same amount. Like you can't bet 10 on Christian who's at plus 500, 10 on Tyreek who's plus 650, 10 on Justin Jefferson who's plus 650 and 10 on CeeDee Lamb who's plus 850 and really make, I mean,
you would make
with
money.
Lamb, right? With Lamb, you would make $45, and it's like,
and what's the fun in that?
Right, and so you look at these
you
guys.
You bet forty bucks, you win 45.
Right, so there are a couple I really, really like. Once you get past those numbers, and here's the thing about that award is it's so different. Then the opposite, right? Like typically those awards or the MVP go to quarterbacks. Offensive player of the year is usually not a quarterback. So that's one of the things that you have to look at. I mean, I'm trying to go back. When was the last time a quarterback won offensive player of the year? It's been a while. Cause I'm in 2019. Yeah, so it's been over 6 years. Patrick Mahomes in 2018 when he had 50 touchdowns. So when you look at it, getting Kyler at plus, what was he on DraftKings? He's plus 6,000. What is he on BetMGM?
Let me see. I had to. He's no, it's Kenneth Murray. 6,600. So it's 66-1 for.
So again, if you want to bet it, that's not bad. But if you're going to bet on a Cardinal, James Conner at plus 13,000 is way better, especially if you're going to go $10.
And BetMGM is a little bit longer at plus 15,000.
100%. And that's the way, if you want to bet on a Cardinal, that's the way you do it. Because I'm not joking. Like 2018 was the last time a quarterback won that award. It's just not an award that quarterbacks tend to win because they get the MVP trophy.
Yeah.
That's why Kyler's MVP odds are shorter than his than his offensive player of the year odds.
Yeah.
So getting James Conner at plus 13,000, think about what he did this year in 12 games or 13 games, whatever it was. And then extrapolate that 17 games. And then if they're a team that wins and makes the playoffs, you know, he's a guy that if he puts up,
he could have a Christian McCaffrey like year because he is talent wise on par with any of the great running backs who just hasn't had a full season. You know, who else has super, super, super long, player of the year odds? Trey McBride at 200 at plus 25,000. But don't bet on a tight end.
No, tight end's tough. But if you want to get frisky, if you're feeling, you know, froggy and you wanna make a bet, I don't think that they're gonna win, but you know, it's nice because it's one of those bets that you can throw a cool $5 on and you would actually make money. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr. is plus 12,000. So he actually has shorter odds than James Conner. But $5 gets you $600.
Oh, actually on BetMGM he's plus 15,000, so he's the same as Conner.
Yeah, and then Malik Nabers is plus 15,000. And then Rome Odunze is actually way down at plus 20,000. And the reason I say, you know, you could do $1 and on those guys and you're going to win $100+. And it's just a little bit of fun. But if they get in the right system and stay healthy, those guys all could put up numbers, you know, exceeding what we saw from wide receivers like Michael Thomas, where he had 17. I mean, they won't have 150 catches, but they could put up, you know, between 1500 and 1700 yards. They're that talented. You know, the thing that you have to worry about is if Derrick Henry ends up in Baltimore, will he run for 2000 yards on the season? And you're like, oh man.
Oh my God. So Derrick Henry with Lamar Jackson, that would just be stupid.
But that's also why you look at this now and you go, hey, where is Derrick Henry? And you see him, where did he fall to? He's at plus 6,500. So again, $10 on Derrick Henry now before he ends up in Baltimore that's a $650 win on a $10 bet. Like, yeah. those are the guys you look for is okay. Guys that are looking to come back. I wouldn't bet Nick Chubb just because, and Nick Chubb is an absolute monster. If anybody's going to come back from that knee injury, it's going to be Nick Chubb. I wouldn't bet it. Plus 5,500 is not good enough odds. Cause even a $5 bet, you know, to get 275, it's not worth it. Like just with a guy that second serious knee injury, right, in his career.
Yeah.
You know, and then from there, I mean, you look at it, Jahmyr Gibbs is an interesting one cause he could be in for a ton of touchdowns. Devin Achane, but I don't know if that guy can stay healthy, man. Like he was a little bit fragile this year. And then an interesting one, but you know, these guys end up, it becomes tough because typically the guys that win the award put up historical numbers, right? Or like borderline historical. And like we went over McCaffrey, Hill, Jefferson, Lamb, all those guys aren't worth the juice. But Puka, I mean, he had a fantastic year. I thought he deserved the rookie of the year.
If it were almost for, like Stroud's rookie, like that was almost like Kyler versus Josh Jacobs. Only Stroud had a better year. And Puka had a better year than Josh Jacobs, and Stroud had a better year than Murray.
Yeah, and so we'll see what happens, but there's some chances there, but I like Puka because, you know, he could be a guy that puts up 1,700-1,800 yards. And if he does that, he's plus 3,000 on DraftKings. So it's a little bit better, but yeah, stay away from Cardinals unless you're going to throw some money on the rookies early before they get drafted, because unless you want to bet James Conner, like, yeah, again,
oh, and also like we said on the other show a while back, Kyler for MVP, those are good odds. Those are good odds.
Right. Those are fantastic odds.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web, we have some information that neither one of us is it's about Paris Johnson. Let's see what you think about that. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. We have some interesting, we have information that we have heard that is sourced. It's not sourced through either one of us, but we've heard sourced information from someone we know. And therefore, it's not something that we necessarily would put out on the Twitter X world or even in print on either one of our sites. But it's something worth talking about. And it's dealing with the future, the immediate future of Paris Johnson, who played all 17 games, every single snap that the Cardinals played this season on offense at right tackle. And with DJ Humphries getting hurt, tearing his ACL at the end of the season, that leaves a gaping hole at left tackle. And it would seem natural that Paris Johnson would slide on over and then they could look for a right tackle, because you feel like it's probably easier to find a right tackle than a left tackle. But this sourced information, this is second and third hand sourced information, is saying that the Cardinals will keep Paris at right tackle. Which, to kind of both of us, it seems a little bit kind of an interesting decision this early on, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess the only reason it's not overly crazy is that you're likely going to get the offensive tackle one if that's what you want to do in the draft. That being said, you still can't guarantee it. I mean, nobody has any idea what Chicago or New England's going to do. We feel like it's going to be Caleb Williams. We feel like the Patriots would take Marvin Harrison before a tackle, but, you never know. It just feels odd to make that call now before the offseason itself plays out. Because how are you going to make a call on something that you don't have all the information on yet?
Right.
That's my biggest thing. It's like,
or maybe unless this news is saying is the plan is to keep him at right tackle. I know that Paris fully intends on this season working out both sides, and I guess we'll know more once free agency starts, because
And that's kind of what my question is. Is this the Cardinals have a plan A, B, and C in free agency, and they're all veteran left tackles that they're going to bring in on short-term deals, and so they're not worried about moving. They're not looking to move they're actually actively trying not to move him? Because if that's the way that they're looking at it, okay, I can kind of understand, right? Like, it's still probably not ideal, but, whatever. I mean, you can go about that. I mean, you look at it, Tyron Smith is old and injury prone, but
Donovan,
he's a free agent.
Smith. Nobody liked him in Kansas City, but he's a capable left tackle. He's not good, but he used to be good.
Right, Donovan Smith. There's not a singular person that you look at and you go, oh yeah, that's who you would go sign. So it's interesting this early, like you said, this early in the process. It's not that I don't see it happening or that I don't understand it. It's just that this early, it just seems early in the process to be making.
It really does. And maybe that's simply it. Their plan A is he stays at right tackle this year. Maybe it is for simply continuity, because right now, if you keep him at right tackle, it looks like you are set at center, right guard, right tackle. And then right. you only have to address the left side rather than moving Paris over to the left side, which means you've got to get someone else who can then build rapport with Will Hernandez and then rebuild, you know, continuity and communication with Paris and whoever the left guard is. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, even though you wouldn't you agree that Paris is probably a perfect left tackle in terms of build and athleticism and skill set?
Yeah, that was kind of the plan, wasn't it? That he would be the guy. So it is interesting that he's getting the look that he is, or remaining over there if that's what they end up doing. So, you know, we'll see how it all works out, but it's just this information this early is kind of not something that we expected, right?
And therefore, when we do our kind of a free agency preview next week, we must, with this information that we've heard, then really have to scour over the veteran tackles that are out there, right?
Yeah, because the list is not super pretty.
Yeah, and you know, I will say this, the Cardinals did find themselves a bit of a gem in Yeldon Froholt. And so maybe there is an under-the-radar type player that they kind of have their eyes on.
And they deserve it. I mean, after what they did last year, I know the wins aren't exactly what everybody wanted in terms of that, but what they did last year, I think giving them the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're doing and they feel confident in, you know, it's one of those situations. So we'll see how it works out. But like, I'm kind of, like I said, I was kind of shocked to see that.
Would you like, do you think their starting left tackle is in the organization? Kelvin Beachum, Carter O'Donnell, Dennis Daly?
You wouldn't think so, right? Like, no. And that's why it's such a weird, call already.
I mean, you could, we talked about this with Kelvin Beachum. You could, like, you can go into the offseason and say, okay, if nothing else goes right, we've got Beach. And we know that right. He is capable. I'm not gonna go what Kyle Ødegaard said on Twitter on Wednesday, say 0% chance he started. Well, I mean, 0% chance he is the plan. Now, he's 0% chance that Kelvin Beachum is one of the first plans either at right or left tackle. And so, but no, that, right. I think what with this information we know is we now have to take a more serious look at the tackles that are out there, both ascending and established. And I think that's kind of the one takeaway we take from that for me.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair way to look at it. But and like I said, they may be like, hey, we're gonna take a tackle at 4 and we're
or
putting out the smoke.
At 7 because they kind of right. have they're gonna do the trade right. down, trade up, or just trade back, and they know that they've got they're gonna get Alt, or they're gonna get the Penn State guy, or they're gonna get
Yeah. Yeah, and so like they know that they're going to do that, so they're like, whatever. We're not really worried about it because that's what we're going to do. And again, a ballsy assumption to be, but like I said, they deserve the benefit of the doubt until they show us that
we
wrong.
Believed in Steve Keim for a long time, right? So
right, exactly.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. This has been episode 518. We will have at least one show next week where we do a free agency preview. So we've got free agency preview next week. We've got combine review coming up the week after, and then free agency. Though there's if you're listening, thank you. But any other Cardinals fans that you know out there, get them on this podcast. We aren't haters. We don't do that. And we try to keep a objective look with a positive feel things moving forward. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rude. This is the Rise Up Seared podcast. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seared podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Whoa!